I'll say about the collective bargaining agreement. There have been some good aspects about things that have happened in this CBA. You know, the percentages of money that players were participating in the BRI, all the things that have transpired that have led and gotten us to where it's currently at.
Rick Bucher.
That's not my problem. My problem is that we don't have a deal ratified. But somehow, some way, the owners and the players have reached a rather peaceful term to come to an agreement on how they're going to spend the next 5 years. Well, now, when you got Steve Ballmer buying in a franchise for $2 billion, this is the opportunity for the players for the first time to say, we've been getting roost this entire time. But it would appear that the players did not fight that fight.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Okay, welcome to the first podcast of 2017 for BJ and Bucher, Four Quarters of Madness. I'm Rick Bucher. He's BJ Armstrong. We want to wish a very happy new year to all of our listeners. And I want to wish one to you, BJ, and our producer, Shane Freeman. Thank you, as always, for joining me on our weekly cast. Any tales to tell on the holiday so far? Anything special? I did note that you put out a most excellent holiday card advertising the family and all that you are doing. And as I made the point just off air, I know that was not your doing. That Sonia has classed you up in a big way, and my kudos to Sonia for doing that.
Yes, she did. I must admit, she did an amazing job. But no, the holidays were good. Holidays were great. And it's always good to be with family and friends and kind of refocus. So happy new year to everyone here and all of our listeners and everywhere. It was a great year, 2016. But 2017, we're looking really to get things started. So let's jump right into it, Mr. Rick Bucher.
All right, let's do that. We're going to go around the league in the first quarter, as we always do. And there's really only one place to go and stay for the quarter. And that has to do with one George Karl writing a book called Furious George, in which he has been critical of everyone and everything. He has offended a lot of people. The general belief is he has burned every last bridge he has. And I'll be honest, BJ, I got a notice about this book coming out about a month ago. And as I do with any of these sports books, and I took a pass because I have this, like, this endless supply, and most of them, I'm looking at it, I'm going, I covered George Karl. I covered the league when he was in. I've heard the stories. I don't need to read a book about it or his version about it. And then some of the excerpts came out, and I thought, okay, I need to get a copy of this book and read it. I have not done that yet. I don't know if you have, but I just wonder, from a big picture perspective, you've sometimes talked about writing a book. You sometimes talked about writing a tell-all book, and you're not alone. A lot of people in the NBA do. He wrote that book. He wrote that book of, I'm just going to say all the things that I've been afraid to say or that I wouldn't say. How do you look at George Karl now that he's written this book and the things that he put in?
Well, normally when I hear something, I go, where do you start? This one I'm going to ask with George Karl is, where do I stop?
Meaning?
I mean, there's so much here. Where do I stop attacking what was said, you know, in the excerpts that were released in the media? Yeah, I'm going to let the urge pass to attack him because I'm bigger than that. For every coach that I played for, I gave him my trust. I put my trust into him that he would help me take my game and help me see something that I couldn't see, and help me to reach the potential that I envisioned for myself, but more importantly, envision with this group of people that I was participating in this sport that I loved with. And when I heard what Coach Karl was saying, it sounded to me that he was looking for ready-made players. The purpose of him coaching is to help the players that he was talking about, you know, whether it was Kenyon Martin or Carmelo or all the players that he named. So I was just a little disappointed. I'm going to let the urge pass, Rick, to criticize him.
I'm not going to pass judgment until I read the book, because I know from experience, whether it's an article, whether it's a magazine piece, whether it's certainly it's a book, that you can take excerpts and sometimes they're taken out of context. Now, obviously, he said some really harsh things that any of us can react to. But I wonder what else was said. I wonder if there's Like, you can take almost anything and isolate it, and people are going to go crazy over it. So I'm going to reserve judgment. This is the question that I ultimately have, and I don't know that you can answer it, but it's the biggest question that I have about this is, why write this book? George Carl in savaging people and saying some very critical things doesn't surprise me. That's not out of character. The George that I knew through the course of covering him as a coach is that, you know, he would say some biting things. The media loved him because he would say things that other people were afraid to say. What I don't understand, and I don't know if you have an answer or you have a theory, like, why write this book? Like, why burn all these bridges? Why go out there and just savage people?
Without knowing and having Coach Carl on, and I would love to have him on the show, I just think he was in a dark place.
I mean, this is a sympathetic figure. This is a guy who fought cancer and won and came, overcame it, not once, I believe, but twice, and was a sympathetic figure. Like, people embraced George because he was much like the late Craig Sager. Like, he fought the good fight, came back and did what he did. And he kind of gave us a glimpse of what that was like. Once you've gone through that experience, then how do you go here? That's what I don't understand. You would have a greater appreciation for people in life after having a near-death experience, wouldn't you?
Well, I just think he was in a dark space. If I was writing a book like that, I would reach out to my close friends. I would reach out to mm-hmm. Rick Bucher. Mm-hmm. And others, and say, what does this sound like? And I'm sure Rick Bucher would have given me, without even yeah. asking him, he would have given me his true assessment. But yeah. his friends, people who really are in the business, you know, Coach Popovich and all the other people in the coaching profession, why aren't those people reaching out to him
or
at this point?
Or before? Why didn't he reach out to them before?
Why didn't he reach out before? So, my friends, they're my friends yeah. because they're honest with me. And before I would do a book like that, okay, I get what the publishers and those people, the editors and all those guys are doing. I mean, this is great content for them. They're going to sell a book, make no doubt
yeah,
about it.
Yeah, but to be clear, he's not going to make enough off of this book to justify what he's done to any future earnings with a team or with anybody in the NBA.
Without question. But how come he wasn't reaching out to his colleagues that were in the business and are currently still working in the business? He could have reached out to Gary Payton. He could have reached out to Sean Kemp. He has coached enough players and been in this business, owners and GMs and all these. I want to believe that someone has cultivated a relationship with George can actually have a true conversation with.
Yeah. Now, there's one other element before we let go, we move on to the second quarter. He brings up the question of PED use in the league. The hidden issues of PED use in the league. And as I said, haven't read the book yet. I'm not going to go based on any excerpts, but he brings up an element that I know has long been like whispered about within the league. And that I wonder, like, you're going to tell me that there's PED use in the NFL. There's PED use in Major League Baseball. But there's no PED use in the NBA. I find that just on the face of it, hard to believe. I don't have any particular hard evidence. We had the down in Miami, we had the clinic that had, there was some innuendo that LeBron and a couple players might be, you know, might be connected to that, but nothing that could ever, you know, face the scrutiny of the light of day. But when you look at the league, BJ, what do you think about just in general the suggestion that there's PED use in the NBA as George Carl presented it?
Before you start pointing fingers and all, okay, now we have to have hard evidence because I take that very serious.
Right.
But I take it very serious as a player. I take it very serious now.
Sure.
But the thing is I don't like it when people started throwing generalizations out. We're part of society. Make no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. Now, if we have hard evidence, bring it. But don't start pointing and saying, well, there's, the, you know, and make it a general statement.
But who should be, let's put it this way. Who should be looking into this? Like, who should be investigating whether there is PED use? Because I look at it, the league really does it. Does the league want to pull back that curtain? Does the league really want to know?
Well, that's a yes and no. I think people don't know the answer to the question, but I don't think anyone really wants to know the answer to the question.
Yeah, I know. But isn't that troubling?
Well, it's troubling if there is a problem.
Look, here's my thing. If we're looking at, for example, and I because I'm being specific, people are going to think that I'm accusing him of using PEDs. I'm not. I have no evidence of this. What LeBron James is doing right now, going to six consecutive NBA finals, the number of minutes that he's played, what he's accomplished, don't you want to know that that's free and clear of PEDs? Or if it's not, like, how do we judge what LeBron James is doing if we do or don't know whether there's an advantage, a performance-enhancing advantage that he has that somebody else doesn't?
Let's take it one step further. Do we really want to know if Babe Ruth...
Do we really want to know? I especially want to know now because we know that Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds did. And my belief is, much like I know that amphetamines were used on a regular basis by Pete Rose in that era of baseball players, and that was never acknowledged as PEDs. Yes, I want to know it all so I can judge it accurately. It doesn't mean that I'm going to say they have I have something against PEDs, but yeah, I'd like to know versus not knowing and guessing.
The reason I bring that up is because Babe Ruth is one of the greatest iconic figures. What's done is done. Whether they did it or they didn't do it or what have you. I'm not suggesting anyone was. I'm not suggesting anyone wasn't because I don't know. And as a fan, I really, you know, I'm not here to judge. It really doesn't bother me one way or another. What I look at now is, do we have the means to clear up the environment so that we can actually do something about it? And it shouldn't be tolerated at any, whether it's high school, college, pro, or wherever.
I don't want to give Babe Ruth shine that he doesn't deserve. So bottom line, I want to know. Let's move on to the second quarter. The top three moments, since we are celebrating the fact that this is the start of 2017. We look back at 2016, the year of 2016. BJ, give me your top three moments, the top three things that happened
in the NBA or just in sports, period.
Well, we're not going to talk about the Detroit Lions here, okay? So just you can take that off the list, all right? That's
okay.
We're not talking about the Detroit Lions. That said, if there's something extraordinary, Shane and I will be will decide whether it's big enough to warrant it, but otherwise it's NBA.
The Cubs was an extraordinary, extraordinary.
Says the guy who lived in Chicago, played in Chicago for a long time.
I never thought I would see the Cubs,
okay.
You know, win a World Series.
All right.
That's first.
I'll give you one of my top three. I never thought I'd see the Cleveland Cavaliers or anyone in Cleveland win a championship. So for me, that's among the top three.
Yeah. The second for me was, you know, Cleveland being down 3-1.
Yes.
It was like this great opera. You know, there were highs and lows and drama and rules and all these things were going on in that series. To me, it was just great theater. I thought it was great.
Well, you can go back to the conference finals and the Warriors coming back from a 3-1 deficit.
It was just great theater. I mean, I really, really enjoyed the finals. And it was just like so many twists and turns. And you're right. And Cleveland winning a championship was, in a weird way, I was like, wow, I respected that. And I thought a big story in the NBA this year was Kevin Durant. When he decided to leave. I thought that was a major story for me because, you know, today's players, they have so much more knowledge and so much more information that's available to them than previous years. And I love to hear when older players and people who played in leagues say, oh, I never would have done that. But here's the thing. If an executive makes a bold move and makes a trade for Kevin Durant, that guy is smart as I don't know what. If the players make it, it's like, well, he's not loyal. What is he doing? He's not true to himself. He's not true to his team. These players have every right to know where they want to play.
Yeah, they do.
And these players have every opportunity to maximize their ability on the floor. So I thought with Kevin Durant, I applauded him. I applauded him then. I applaud him now. And to see that he's happy playing where he wants to be, to me, that's what it's all about. And people change jobs all the time in this country. People move, people relocate, people change professions, and that's great. You know, that's looking in your inner soul and finding, and we applaud people who take chances on themselves. Yeah. And they quit, they're lawyers, and they stop being a lawyer to pursue their dream in music. And because they're pursuing their passion.
But they go,
but why can't Kevin Durant do that? Why can't he do that?
Yeah, well, he's not even taking nearly that kind of a risk. But on the flip side, when those people become successes, like, they get the same thing. Like, what are you doing? Like, mom and dad who paid for the law degree, and you go off and decide, you know what, I'm going to be a musician, or I'm going to write poetry on, you know, in Sumatra. You know, there's some pushback there until you make it a success. And ultimately, that is going to be how KD's decision is going to be defined, and I dare say by him when it's all said and done. If he ends up winning a championship with Golden State, then it will all have been worth it. If he doesn't, then I wonder whether there's going to be some reflection on what he lost, because clearly he lost something going to Oklahoma City. I'm going to give you my three very quickly.
You mean clearly he lost something going to Golden State? What did he lose?
He lost the ability. The same thing that LeBron James lost and then regained in winning in Cleveland, which is, I'm going to go through the tough times. I'm going to find a way to make it work here. There's always going to be that question. Maybe it's not regret, but there's always going to be that question in his head is, I left Oklahoma City. I went to Golden State. I didn't accomplish anything more there than I did in Oklahoma City. There's going to be that what if. What if I had not done it this way? What if I had done it the other way? I'm not saying that anybody has the right to criticize him for that decision, but I think we all do that. Like, we make decisions along the road of life, and ultimately we look back and we're like, wow, I wonder what it would have turned out like if I hadn't gone this direction. And sometimes when it turns out well, we're like, man, am I glad I made that move, because I didn't know how it was going to happen at the time. And other times it doesn't turn out and we go, huh, wonder if I had stayed, or wonder if I had gone this way, or wonder if I had left. There's always that question. He's opened that up simply because he made a decision. He'd have the same opportunity to do it if he hadn't left and he stayed in Oklahoma City the whole time. There would be probably that thought, depending on what happens. What if I had gone to Golden State? What if I had changed direction there? I think that's always available to us. My top three, very quickly. I'm going to go with, because I was there, and this is a very personal thing, the Warriors started the season, 23-0. I was in Milwaukee when the streak came to an end. And what I loved about it more than anything was how engaged the Milwaukee Bucks fans were. There was this whole section of fans, the Brew Crew or whatever the hell they're called, that support the team. And they were all wearing 23-1 t-shirts. And they were chanting. Right. They were so into the game. It was a back-to-back. The Warriors had gone double overtime the night before in Boston. They were pushing to try to keep the record going. I just love the engagement, how much it meant to the Bucks fans, how much it meant to the team. And I love being there and seeing it and how hard the Warriors played and trying to keep it alive and just coming up short. That's my number three. Again, this is very Warrior-centric. Number two was the quarter that Klay Thompson had in game six, basically to save the Warriors' ass when he had 19 points in the third quarter. I think he had 11 threes. There's something about Klay Thompson when he gets hot, and he gets red hot. We've seen KD, we've seen Steph, but they at least look like there's some form of consciousness going on. With Klay, there's none. I can't wait till the ball gets back in my hands because I'm firing it again. And I know that it's going down. And if it doesn't go down, I can't believe it didn't go down. Give it to me again. There's like this one-minded zeal that he has that I just love watching. When a guy is, when he's in the zone, nothing else exists in the world, including his dog, Rocco. And then the number one is the fact that Cleveland won a championship, that LeBron was able to make good. If there's anything in his legacy that he's done, It's going back to Cleveland and winning a championship and doing it. You know, we can quibble about how much Kyrie whether LeBron could have done it if he didn't have a Kyrie there to hit that shot, that whether it would have happened if Draymond hadn't been suspended. Bottom line is, LeBron James went back to Cleveland and he brought them a championship.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, this is Shane on the BJ and Bucher podcast. In today's halftime break, we have some entertainment for you guys to start the new year off. And this is Keith Murray's The Most Beautifulest Thing in This World. Yeah, you heard it. Beautifulest. All right, guys, enjoy.
Strictly Def Squad LOG takes it to the street.
Y'all make the logical. It's comical. The astronomical is coming through like the flu bombing you. And then bombing in your crew, too. With the musical, mystical, magical, you know how I do. The word attack skills and vocabulary, too. Coming hits in the disc edition, it's all brand new. You're through. I'm interplanetarian like Doctor Who. So who? Wanna get chipped on, word is bone. I'm kicking rounds to the AM vote just wrong. Now Quincy, but I'm back on the block and not selling crack. I'm coming in with the fat, funk flows and tracks. So what you saying, Black? With all that yakety yak. My artifacts can't be beat with bats. I'm saying, I eat everything up on the menu and bend you and send you swaying to be continued. The most beautifulest thing in this world is just like that.
I get it, yeah.
The most beautifulest thing in this world. In a moment, opponents are suspects. Caught up in the receptation, rain and the text. Leaks, I speak my concepts free. The itch me, sun cheek, funk figures of speech. Now that is in the open, I'm open, token, scoping, waiting for the next to get open on and break them down like an organic compound. That's the way of the world as the earth goes round. Now, how the f you sound? I represent my clique like a faux pound. You better pack your leather dope with medication for the shaking meditation from the earth to quake. That we be making up a faking. I get down for my crown clown. Shaking the membrane of Encyclopedia Brown. Freaking the funk in any throwdown. Why you sustain the sound of it?
But the most beautifulest thing in this world is just like that.
I give it ya.
The most beautifulest thing in this world
is just like that.
I give it ya.
The most beautifulest thing in this world.
All right. Your favorite quarter and mine. It's time for the trivia challenge to see who gets dissed with a meme. By the way, I believe that we didn't get a meme out the last time.
Yeah, no. Stop with the we.
What?
Stop with the
what?
We.
What?
Where was my? I won last week.
Yeah, I know. I'm not in charge of the memes.
That was my bad.
I think it was. You were penalized by the fact that the previous two times when you lost, you were so damn slow getting the meme out that it was, no, you can't.
Well, can I get my meme out first, Dean? Or
yeah,
can I get my meme first, Dean?
Like, no, that was 2016. This is 2017. That's old. We can't, that file is expired. So you're going to have to win today to be able to get the meme that shows you knocking me out.
Baby,
in our memory, it's only
Shane,
me. Karate chop Shane, in the head.
Shane, can I get the
dodge
meme
ball
out with
to
me?
The beam.
Can I get the meme out with me taking Rick out with a microphone in my hand?
Can
I get that meme out?
You can if you win today. So let's go. All right. So here's my question to you. Which player led the league in assists per game in the 2015-2016 season? Here are the four choices: Rajon Rondo, John Wall, Chris Paul, or Russell Westbrook?
John Wall.
That would be incorrect. Rajon Rondo was the leading assist man in Sacramento with an average of 11.7 assists per game. John Wall was actually third. Chris Paul was fourth. He led the league in assist percentage, but nobody cares about that. And Russell Westbrook was actually number two.
Okay. All right.
What do you got?
Which player led the league in personal fouls for 2015-2016 season? A, Mason Plumlee. B, I can't even pronounce his name. Giannis.
Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Yes. Three, Roy Hibbert. D, Andre Drummond.
That is interesting. I want to reduce it. Boy, that's good. It's either Andre or it's Plumlee. It's going to be my guess. And I am going to go with, trying to think who was hurt more. I'm going to go with Plumlee. Damn it.
Giannis.
Was it really?
Yeah, led the league with 258 fouls on the season.
You know what? That's one of those where the name was so weird as far as his inclusion in there. You would think it's bigs who are just out there taking fouls. I should have gone that direction. All right. 0-0. Here's your chance to get on the board. Which player led the league in field goal percentage in the 2015-16 season? By the way, all these being current, I'm thinking that like Shane's decided he's going to take mercy on us. Let me try to give you guys something that you might be able to answer. Field goal percentage in the last season. Was it, who was the leader? Dwight Howard, Hassan Whiteside, DeAndre Jordan, or Enes Kanter?
DeAndre Jordan.
That would be correct. Had the highest field goal shooting percentage of 70.3%. Dwight Howard was second. Hassan Whiteside was third. Enes Kanter was fourth. Okay.
Okay.
What do you got? The pressure's on. I need to push it to overtime once
this
again.
This player led the league in scoring during the 2015-16 season. A, Steph Curry. B, LeBron James. C, James Harden. D, Kevin Durant.
The leader in scoring last year, that was Steph Curry.
James Harden. He had 2,376 points, nudging out MVP Steph Curry by just 1 point. Can we get the song said, Mama said, knock you out? What'd you say, Mama said, knock you out? Hey.
Yeah. All right. Well, while you celebrate, I will prepare our listeners for the fourth quarter and our guest, the one, the only, Mark Jackson, coming up. Well, it's my pleasure to welcome in somebody that is a friend of the podcast. Both BJ and I know him well. The one, the only, Mark Action Jackson joins us now on.
Can you say that again, Rick? Mark, who? Can you say that again?
That's Mark Action Jackson.
With emphasis on action.
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
So we all know you from TV fame. We know you as a player. We know you as a coach. We don't have a whole lot of time with you here in the fourth quarter, so I want to get right to it, Mark. What are your aspirations when it comes to coaching again? Considering that I'm surprised, and you and I have talked about this off air, surprised that with all the success that you had in your tenure with the Warriors, that you haven't gotten another shot already. But when now it's been a while since we've spoken. How do you feel about your prospects and where that, if you even still entertain the idea of you want to go back to coaching?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Nothing but love and respect for you guys, and look forward to many more opportunities of joining you. To answer your question, I had a truly great time coaching, developing great relationships, and had a blast. It was a lifelong dream of mine to coach. We experienced great success collectively, something I'm extremely proud of. With that being said, I'm having an incredible time calling games for ESPN, ABC, working with Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy and Doris Burke and Lisa Salters and the entire crew. There's a great people that embraced me from day one. And when my coaching days ended with the Warriors, immediately they embraced me again. So I'm extremely proud and happy and enthused to be calling games. If I ever coach again, we'll see how that plays out. But right now I'm really having a blast calling. That's not a standard line. When you get an opportunity coming from where I came from to call an NBA finals and to be amongst friends where there's no nitpicking and no jealousy, it's truly a blast.
In today's game, how would you defend these point guards, Russell Westbrooks, the Derrick Roses, the Stephen Currys? What would you do against them today as you see the game, how's it evolved since the time when you and I were playing? What would you do against these guys in today's game under the rules and how the game is played?
Well, I tell you what, you're well aware of this. It's different than playing B.J. Armstrong or B.J. Armstrong defending Mark Jackson. It's a totally different task. And what makes it even more so of a task is not just their ability to score, because certainly you could score and shoot the basketball. But you put on the floor, you know, a guy at the power forward or center position that now all of a sudden has to be defended, diving to the cup, or more importantly, spotting out at the three-point line. So now you got shooters all around the court, which makes it extremely tough. The way you defend it, to give yourself the best possible chance, you got to have guys athletic enough, versatile enough, and with enough game plan discipline to try to make those guys beat you on your terms, because they're so successful beating you on their terms. They're great players and great scorers. You got to try to disrupt their rhythm, and it you cannot do it individually. So it starts with great team defense, and certainly a great, you know, power forward or center that has the ability to defend a pick and roll.
How much, Mark, when you talk about defending and in today's game and how it was when you played, how do you find that line of, you know, applying what you know and what you experienced and accepting that the game and the players and the approach are different today when you're doing a broadcast? Like, finding that line between talking about the way it was with you and the way it is now.
Well, for me, it's easy. And the reason why I say that is because I don't try to sound like an old has-been. Truth be told, it just time has changed and the mindset has not changed, because the way I defend B.J. Armstrong in the pick and roll is totally different than the way I defend, you know, Gary Payton or Jason Kidd. So it's just different guys in the pick and roll action, which changes it. And it doesn't change because times change. It changed because the individuals change. So the way you defend it is totally different. And the way you explain it to me is the same way that has been explained no matter who you were defending. It's just an equation that you attempt to put an answer to.
Hey, Mark, now that, you know, you've had an opportunity to coach, and one of the things I've always wanted to ask, especially a former player who has coached in the NBA, is now the game is analytics, the way the game is played. We put more emphasis on three-point shooting. We put more emphasis on getting to the basket. How has that kind of changed your view of the game when you first retired, and how did it affect you, or what did it influence you in the way you were coaching?
It gives you more detailed data than we've had, with all due respect, because now you have people on the payroll who that's, you know, their job exclusively. So I give it, you know, high grades as far as that's concerned. What I will not do is disrespect the history of the game. You're well aware of. Analytics is nothing new. The detail of it, the people on board on the payroll, that job exclusively to prepare and bring you numbers, that's probably, you know, more extreme. But Rick Pitino in 1987 was using analytics. Any great coach, Pat Riley in 1990 was using analytics. Any great coach, Jeff Van Gundy, when you say, okay, how are we going to defend Chris Paul on the pick and roll? You think we're just freestyling that we're going to send him a certain way, or James Harden? No, analytics and watching game plan and being game plan disciplined, understanding how you're going to defend this guy and how you're going to make Jason Kidd a jump shooter, those were analytics. That wasn't just off the top of somebody's head. So I think great coaches throughout the history of the game has used analytics. I think it's better wrapped up today because of the detail and the specific people that you have bringing the data, and the computer age and all the stuff we have available to us makes us better prepared to come to a conclusion. But you certainly use it. But I don't think you take away the instincts also of making decisions throughout the course of a game. But I think you put it all in the same pot. The great coaches come up with the best decisions. And no matter how much input you have, analytics or instincts, you're going to make mistakes as a player, as a coach, as an organization. And that's just the way it is. But I think it prepares us much better today.
That's the voice of Mark Jackson, ESPN broadcaster, legendary point guard, and former head coach of the Golden State Warriors. I have to jump in here, BJ, because you kind of dovetail all of this together in terms of talking about the game and the analytics and how it's approached. And I appreciate that you're not out there campaigning for a job, and you said that you wouldn't disrespect the game. But as we know, this is the tricky part I see for any guy who's been a head coach and aspires to be a head coach once again, which is if you're respecting the position and you're respecting the job, you don't campaign, particularly knowing that there aren't any specific openings right now. But we also know that guys who campaign end up getting those jobs, Mark. So so how do you walk that line where you want to do, you want to do this if you want to do this again, if you want the chance to do it again, but you see people doing it in a way that you would not do and they end up coming out ahead? How do you approach that?
Well, you trust the process. And,
my God, the 76ers? No, oh, sorry. You want that job? What?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm at peace with what I'm doing and how I'm living my life. And I'm not going to go outside of my character and who I am because it worked for somebody else in some other situation. There's 30 jobs. There's 30 great jobs. If I never coach again, I fulfilled my dream of coaching an NBA team and experienced a certain level of success, and I'm excited about it. I'm extremely grateful. And like I said, this is not standard line. I'm absolutely having a great time calling NBA games, and I look forward to, you know, every time I put a headset on, I'm having a blast. I'm still in the action. Everything else will take care of itself.
Well, you may not campaign for the job, but well, Mark, you had an exceptional run as a head coach in this league, and I truly believe you were one of the talented young coaches when your career began and you made the transition from player to coach. And if anyone, any owner or executive is listening, your people skills are impeccable. You've been terrific. You know the game. And I commend you on not campaigning for a job, and you're letting your work speak for itself. So that is to be commended. And I really respect the way you've always approached as a player. And I'd just love to see the shimmy one more time on the sideline. I just got to see it one more time.
I'm amazed, Mark, that you really can say that you're content in life without having me peer over the back of a huddle while you're talking to a team in a timeout, trying to figure out what the hell you're going to do next. And I just, the idea that you're comfortable doing what you're doing without that in your life is hard for me to believe. But that said, I'll take you at your word. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. Hopefully we'll have you on again in the near future or sometime down the line. And we'll be talking about Mark Jackson and his next head coaching turn, even though you're perfectly happy doing what you're doing right now.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me, man. You guys are the absolute best and nothing but love and respect again.
You got it.
All right, Mark. Thank you.
All right.
I hope you enjoyed listening to our conversation with Mark Jackson. Remember, you can always listen to us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show there. Rate and leave a review. We'd love to hear what you think. You can also make sure that we're not only putting out podcasts, we're putting out all sorts of unique, original content. I myself will be writing on occasion for the bjandbuecher.com website. It's going to be a lot of stuff there. And obviously, you can always follow us on Twitter as well, @BJ and Buecher. Thanks for listening. We'll be back at you next week.